Joining us now on the Adam Gold Show is from, I'm going to have to let him tell me where Trey Wingo is from. He is an expert on the National Football League, 33rd team, and I'll let you fill in the blanks, sir. How are you?
Oh, Adam, good to be with you. Yeah, 33rd team, doing great stuff there. My podcast with Chase Daniel, working with the Stunt app, which is basically Twitter just for sports and all the other crap you have to filter through. Download the Stunt app wherever you want. Stink and I do a show every Monday, but it's really a platform for people to express their opinions about sports. And we encourage you can download it at the App Store or Google Play. Also do some stuff for the PGA Tour, working with NBC this summer, a little bit on some of their golf coverage. Gosh. And in just a little bit, I'm launching a new podcast with Amazon and Wondery with my old SportsCenter co-host Kevin Frazier called Alternate Routes, where we take one flash moment in time and say, what if it had gone the other way? For example, for those in North Carolina, what if Michael Jordan had missed the shot in 1982 NCAA championship game?
Oh, wait, you're going what there.
Yeah, what happens there? Does he crumble? Does he go to baseball and end up managing a Quickie Mart? And does Patrick Ewing become the greatest college player of all time, probably wins three championships? Maybe that Villanova run in 1985 doesn't materialize, or 86, I think it was, 85.
85.
Materialize, and yeah, so all that kind of stuff. So it's coming out after the Super Bowl, Alternate Routes, and it's really going to be a lot of fun.
All of that is awesome. Trey Wingo here. All right, so what if the Lions, Dan Campbell, had thrown the ball on third down? What if they had gone for it rather than kicked a field goal before the end of the first half? Because that game, regardless of how great San Francisco was in the second half, was defined by the decisions that Dan Campbell made, which, frankly, field goal or going for it in the second half, I didn't hate either decision. I understood why people did, but I didn't hate either one. I hated the first one. I hated the one in the first half because that's when you were dominating. How did you see those?
Well, first of all, you're exactly right. And I actually going to have the exact opposite opinion here. I thought what he did at the end of the half was perfect. Okay? The point being, it's 21-7.
Right.
If you remember a couple of years ago, the Chiefs, the high-flying Kansas City Chiefs against the Bengals in the AFC Championship game, were up 21-10. And they had a chance, they had one more play without a timeout to either get it in the end zone or kick a field goal that would have put them up 14 points. They go for it. Tyreek Hill is stopped, and that completely turned that entire game. And the Bengals have this unbelievable second half and go on to beat them in overtime. If they had just kicked that field goal, a field goal at the end of the game for the Chiefs would have won them, and then we're talking about maybe them going to their fifth straight Super Bowl.
Right.
So I thought with a young team that has never been in the postseason before, never been in this crucible before, Dan did the prudent thing at the end of the half. Hey, we don't want to leave points on the field. Let's take the points. We're up by 17 at the half. Oh, by the way, before Sunday, in the history of conference championship games, no team had ever lost after being up by 17 or more at the half. History was on their side, right? So I thought that was the prudent decision. Now we go to the second half. The 49ers start it, and they kick a field goal to cut it to 14. The Lions start to drive. They get down to the 28-yard line. Now you're about halfway through the third quarter, right? It's 4th and 2 from the 20. Michael Badgley is not Justin Tucker. He's a very good kicker. We're talking about a 45-yard field goal. I'd say he makes those about 95% of the time. So what you do as a head coach, you have to manage the moment. It's not, this is who we are. This is what we always do. What's the best possible situation that I can put my team in? And I would suggest very strongly that a team that had never been there before and was dealing with the moment, if you kick that field goal, you can say to them, guys, we're good. We played half the third quarter. We still have our 17-point lead. So they miss, right? They don't make the completion. And you can make the argument that Reynolds should have caught it. I totally understand that.
Yeah.
But now it's a huge momentum swing for San Francisco. And you can feel it in the building. And then what happens after that? The Niners have this 20-0 run. There's the fumble. There's more drop passes. Now the team is pressing. I would offer to you that the most important thing a head coach can do is manage the moment and understand what is necessary at the time. And I think both of those times he should have kicked the field goal. Because now when you're down in the fourth quarter, 27-24, you're a 7-point underdog on the road. You want to extend the game. You need to stay in the game as long as possible. I would also have kicked the field goal there so we can say, hey, guys, we had a terrible run. Guess what? If I would have told you at the start of the game, with 5 minutes to play, it's all tied up, would you take it? Hell yeah, they would have taken it. So I think that Dan, who I think has done wonderful things for the Lions and is going to be a great head coach for a long time, messed it up. And he needs to understand how to manage the moment better.
Trey Wingo is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show, 33 team. The podcast you do with Chase Daniels. You got 1,000 things. I appreciate that you taking time. And you're living my best life. I almost wish I did it. Okay, so you and I disagree on all of the field goals. In the second half, the second one, the one that would have tied the game, that is the one I thought, okay, that's the one I would have taken if I was going to kick a field goal there, even though it was a 47-yarder. And by the way, in his career, Badgley had only been with Detroit for a little bit. It's probably closer to 75% between 40 and 49, regardless. But I don't think he had missed one with the Lions this year. But the second one would have got us even. And at that point, no matter what San Francisco did, we would have had a chance to either tie or win the game with the ball.
Exactly.
So that's the one
I
could
get.
That's
all you want. That's
right.
All you want.
That
I just think, and we can move on from this. I just think you have a young team, okay? And it's like Jimmy Johnson was great at this. Like, he could read his team very well. Like, when they were playing San Francisco in the second of their three straight NFC championship games, when they're about to go back to Super Bowl 28, he could tell they were a little nervous, right? He could tell that the team, even though they were the defending Super Bowl champs, had the Leon Lett Miami Dolphins game, all that stuff, he could tell they were a little on edge. So he called another radio station in Dallas and said, hey, don't worry about it. We're going to win the game. Put in big, bold headlines. We will win the game. And his players are like, hell yeah. Jimmy believes in us. We're good. I think Dan Campbell would have done his team a great, great service by saying to them, guys, kick the field goal, 17 points. We're up 17 on the road. We were 7-point underdogs. We only got a quarter and a half to play. Let's go. I just don't think he managed the team correctly.
Again, I don't want to belabor this point either. 28-7, because they were having so much success running the football. 28-7 is so much better and decisive than 24-7.
You're right, but the only thing I'll say is every decision you make,
yep,
you have to incorporate the downside risk.
Correct, I agree.
And he did it at the end of the half. He realized we can't walk away from here with no points, because that would have been a disaster. And then on the other two decisions, he didn't think about the downside risk. As a head coach, you don't have to think about it. He said, well, I was confident we were going to make it. Yeah, of course you're always confident you're going to make it. But you have to say to yourself, what if we don't? How does that affect the game? How does that affect my team? And I think that's the mistake he made.
Trey Wingo is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. All right. Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, history. This is only the second time. I shouldn't say that, because Buffalo, and this is the anniversary of the fourth of Buffalo's four consecutive Super Bowls.
They 30-13, the final score.
They should have won the first one. The other three, yep, they were not the better team by any stretch of the imagination. But anyway, they should have won the first one. But other than that, there's only two teams that have won that have been to the Super Bowl 4 out of 5 years: New England and then Kansas City. Historical perspective on Mahomes and Andy Reid, and I think maybe Andy Reid more so than Mahomes, since we have so much more history with Patty.
Yeah, I'll start with Patrick, though, because Adam, I know you're a baseball guy.
Yes.
And one of my favorite stats of all time is Derek Jeter's record in the postseason. For those that don't know, when Derek was in his prime playing with the Yankees, in his career, now this is a remarkable one, he played 158 career postseason games. Okay, 158. That's essentially a full baseball.
Yep.
In the postseason. When, by the way, you're not getting licks on fourth and fifth for spot starters, you're getting your top two and occasionally your third best starter. So you really, hits are at a premium in the postseason. We all know this, right? So
mm-hmm.
Jeter's postseason numbers for 158 games, .308 average, 20 home runs, 61 RBIs, 111 runs scored, and 20-something stolen bases, which is a ridiculous for a season, that's an MVP, and he did that in the postseason,
yep.
Okay? Well, this was Patrick Mahomes' 17th career playoff game. So essentially now Patrick Mahomes has played a full season of postseason games. In the postseason with Patrick Mahomes as a quarterback, the Chiefs are 14-3. He's been responsible for 45 touchdowns versus only 8 turnovers, a completion percentage of 67.5%, and a passer rating of 106 point something. Now, to put that in perspective, his passer rating in the regular season for his career is 92 point something. Okay? So we're talking about a Derek Jeter type escalation of talent against supposedly the much better teams that you are playing. That's what we're seeing historically in Patrick Mahomes. And you go look at the numbers for Mahomes in his first six seasons as a starter, as opposed to Tom Brady's first six seasons as a starter. The only category in which Tom Brady has an advantage is that he won 3 Super Bowls in his first 6 years, only went to 3. Patrick is in his 4th, and he has a chance to tie Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. And in every other category, regular season record, postseason record, touchdown to interception ratio, passer rating, he is killing Tom Brady's numbers. So what we're seeing here is generational excellence. And I thought for Andy Reid, there's never been, I have a lot of Philly fans like, well, how come he didn't do this in Philly? Because 5 ain't 15.
Right.
Okay.
As good as Donovan McNabb was. Right.
Yeah, he's a really good quarterback. He ain't 15.
Mm-hmm.
And, he got them to, I think, 4 in a row in Philadelphia and 5 there and now 6 in Kansas City. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And, it's really, people always want to talk about the negative, and we can do that. Why did Dan Campbell make those decisions, or why did the Ravens choke? The short answer, yes. I'm sure we'll get to that in a minute. But, I'm all for celebrating greatness. What we're seeing out of this combination of Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, they're in their six straight AFC championship games. They hosted it 5 years in a row. No one had ever done it more than 3, and they did it 5 years in a row. I mean, it's just nuts. And, the Niners are favored, but, you tell me, anyone with a right-thinking mind, why are you betting against that guy?
I won't do that anymore. I will not do that. No chance I do that now. Man, although I did. I thought Baltimore would win, but I liked Kansas City with 3.5. I just figured Justin Tucker was going to kick some 64-yard field goal to win it at the end. So let's get to that real quick, because you can make the argument that Baltimore choked. I don't want to sell Kansas City's defense short, which is obviously excellent. The play that Snead made on Zay Flowers going in, that was a rough about 10 minutes for Zay Flowers. But the play he made on Flowers going into the end zone was an elite play, because if he doesn't make that play, it's a touchdown, and you don't know what's going to happen after that. But if I could just juxtapose the two games, Brock Purdy did more Lamar Jackson things than Lamar Jackson did for Baltimore the previous game. And that, to me, is the difference in the outcomes, that we didn't really see the best of Lamar Jackson. We saw a guy who was maybe a little tentative.
Real quickly on Purdy, 13 of 16 for 170-something yards and 60-something rushing yards all in the second half.
Yeah.
Out of possible 0 to 100, a QBR, the ESPN metric, he measured out at 99.1 in the second half. That is what we call responding to the moment.
Yeah.
Okay? So now, to your point, let's juxtapose that against the Ravens. In that game, the Ravens were at home playing a presumptive MVP at quarterback, Lamar Jackson, and they had the number one scoring defense in the NFL.
Yeah.
They choked as an organization. Lamar had 5 completions in the first half. One was to himself, which, by the way, was an amazing play. Amazing play.
Yeah.
But, there was nothing there.
Right.
In that game, they had 3 turnovers. Lamar Jackson fumble, 2 turnovers in the red zone. Not only the play by Legarius Sneed, which, by the way, is, you want to call it karma, coincidence, irony, whatever. That kept Baltimore out of the game, much in the same way Mecole Hardman's fumble through the back of the end zone against the Bills last week kept Buffalo in the game. So, 1 week later, it goes full circle. They also had 4 personal fouls.
Yep.
And they were all egregious and obvious. Kyle Van Noy headbutting Travis Kelce, baited him into it like a pro, perfectly. Henry, the big defensive tackle, hits Patrick Mahomes in the head with his hand as he's running. I mean, it's the most obvious call you can ever get. Mm-hmm. Why are you punching the quarterback in the face? Jadeveon Clowney also comes in and headbutts Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
Again, you're going to get that call every time. And then Zay Flowers, to your point, right after that great catch, stands over the player, taunts, throws the ball down at him. I mean, that's the easiest call of all time, according to the rules. And then what happened on the very next play? They're back at 15 yards, and then the fumble. So, I mean, they did all these things. And the other thing, which I thought was really interesting, they were the number one rushing team in the NFL in the regular season. They dropped back on 82% of their snaps on offense. What are you doing? What are you doing? The turnovers, the incompletions, the personal fouls, and bad game management. The Ravens did not respond to the moment, and that was my question going in. I knew the Chiefs could handle it. I didn't know if the Ravens could handle it. It turns out they couldn't.
Yeah, they handed it off 8 times. I think Lamar had 4 or 5 designed runs, and they dropped back like 45 times. And I just, for the life
of me,
I just don't understand that. All right, final thing. First of all, I'm assuming you're taking Kansas City next in 2 weeks over, because I am.
Yeah. Tell me why I shouldn't. Somebody help me out.
Exactly. Some way, shape, or form, as long as 87 is okay. And by the way, are you a big Swiftie now?
Well, I mean, I think we all have to be. But I do find it hilarious, by the way, how many people are offended by this.
I know.
Like, just crawl back into your cave, man. She's not ruining your experience. The Jason Kelce, when we showed him shirtless jumping out of Sweet Buffalo, that's not about the game. It's terrible.
Yeah, I know.
He didn't have a problem with that. Then just shut up with all the other stuff.
I love
it. Shut up and watch the game or turn it off.
I didn't realize there was we're not going to get into it, but I didn't realize there was a much larger conspiracy at work with Taylor Swift in the NFL.
Yeah.
But I was unaware of that, but now I'll have to pay attention to it. final thing. Ben Johnson staying in Detroit. To me, this is about Washington maybe wanting to go in a different direction, more than Ben Johnson deciding to stay and help Detroit win a Super Bowl. How do you read this?
Well, I think that any of these opportunities for coaches, the first question any candidate has to say is, what's the quarterback situation?
Right.
No one knows that better than Bill Belichick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, Brady? Good, whatever. Since Brady, crap, crap, crap. It's been terrible, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that plays a part of it. I will say, I do believe there's a part of this, which is like Dan Quinn wanting to stay in Dallas last season after last year's playing out in the postseason. He feels comfortable with what he's doing. He likes the players. And, you know, Dan, when you're a head coach, you don't really coach. It's about management. Like
right.
I said. It's about game management. Dan's a coach at heart, and he got back to it. And if he doesn't get the Seattle job, he's going to go back to Dallas. I you know, Ben is on a fast track, and he's going to get a head coaching job somewhere. But there are a lot of things to like about the Lions' situation with Amon-Ra and Reynolds and you know, all the wide receivers Williams and Gibbs and Montgomery and Laporta as a rookie. I mean, there's a lot of things that are attractive about that job if you're an offensive coordinator.
I get it, but Washington is going to have – they have the second pick in the draft, 5 other picks in the top 102. They have skill position players already in place. They just need help on both lines, really one of the edges on defense and the offensive line. But, man, with all those picks, they can certainly address that and $84 million in cap space. To me, with a new owner who and a heritage franchise, that is hard to turn down. Trey Wingo, I appreciate your time. At Wingo's with a Z on the end of it. And we'll talk again. Next time we'll talk golf. How about that?
Love it, Adam. Always a pleasure. Thanks,
pal. Take care. Trey Wingo here on the Adam Gold Show.